Find a position or posture that supports meditation. For those of you who are sitting, I'll proceed with a little bit of a body scan, but this can work in whatever position you might be. So first of all, I invite you to give attention to your spine. Encourage it to be straight, almost like a plumb line is pulling the top of your head to the ceiling. You may want to rock forward and back or side to side and just find a nice balance point where your skeleton just hangs from that support. And notice also where your seat or your feet touch a surface, the chair or the ground or your legs, and feel the earth supporting you. Next, I invite you to start at the top of your head, your scalp, your facial muscles. And if there's any place of tension, just give it attention and let it relax. So the face, the jaw, the neck, let your shoulders drop from your ears. Give attention to your torso, your shoulders and arms and hands, let them be relaxed. Your abdomen and hara, which is a place of strength and groundedness. Your pelvis, your legs. Now that you're relaxed and upright, perhaps give attention to whatever anchor you use, such as the breath in and out, or sounds as they arise and fall away. Allow some settling into the silence. And if thoughts or feelings or distractions arise, you can actually welcome them, but don't invite them to stay. So now I invite you to join me in a short guided meditation. I invite you to give attention again to your posture, just inviting balance and support from the earth. And now I invite you to allow your mind to imagine the sky in its beautiful vastness, its boundlessness. In Flagstaff, we're blessed with many sunny days with blue skies. Perhaps you can feel the sense of space within and outside of yourself, without boundary. You can't reach the end of the sky. It is boundless. And in this place, you may be looking out on the sky and see a cloud. It's white and puffy. Maybe it's gray and dark. And if you watch it for a few minutes, it changes. The shape, the texture, the light. The light illumines different parts of it. And you can appreciate this cloud as a cloud, knowing it will change and it will pass. Now consider this, that cloud you were watching is like a thought, a concern, a feeling, a memory. Can you watch the thought or feeling and sense that it just arises and will pass? Or if you feel drawn to that feeling or thought, can you be aware of aversion or desire, subtle or strong or neutral? That feeling of being pulled towards or pulled away or pushed away? Does that stay or go or change as you attend to it? And what does it feel like when you are attending in that way? And then when you might just be attending to the blue sky and the boundlessness, settling into that serenity. And now I would like to invite you to a guided metta meditation. So if you need to adjust your position or posture, feel free. So I invite you to bring to mind someone from whom it's easy to feel warmth and friendliness. And this may be a friend, a teacher, a beloved four-legged, whatever just brings that warm, easy, loving feeling. Take that in, and perhaps some words can go with that. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be safe. May I experience compassion and ease. May I be aware of the interconnectedness of all beings. I am not alone. May I be happy. May I be peaceful. May I be safe. May I experience compassion and ease. May I be aware of the interconnectedness of all beings. And as you are filled with this warmth, perhaps you can allow that to expand to someone you care about and feel an ease of love or friendship. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be safe. May you experience compassion and ease. May you be aware of the interconnectedness of all beings. And perhaps you can expand that a little further to someone neutral or just to your neighbors, whether it's here or at home. May you be happy. May you be peaceful. May you be safe. May you experience compassion and ease. May you be aware of the interconnectedness of all beings. And if it feels right, perhaps you can extend that even further, just wherever, however it goes, because that is boundless as well. May we be happy. May we be peaceful. May we be safe. May we experience compassion and ease. May we be aware of the interconnectedness of all beings. So as I was saying, I'm kind of going to discuss kind of a big topic, but I'll name it in a little while. And I'm hoping that I can offer some thoughts and practice that will make this topic friendly and accessible for each of you in some way, small or otherwise. So I think many of you know that I've been going through ox herder pictures. And I think I need to be able to share screen. Can I be made a co-host?
So you can speak into the microphone better because I was back there on the
computer. You okay? I'm trying. So the Oxherder pictures are a set of 10 paintings that have been done over and over again, but they started in the Sung Dynasty in China. And they kind of are one way of depicting points along our spiritual journey. And I feel that they're not like stages. You go from one to the other to the other. They can happen in a lifetime, in a month, a year, in one sitting. So it's really something that's it just helps us to share some of that journey. And that's what I've tried to do with going through the prior pictures. And it starts with, the Oxherder really is us, the practitioner. And we're upset with the world, or we're not happy, or we think that life could be better. So we hear a call to a spiritual path. We look for it, we find, try different things, and then we settle into a practice. And the practice includes meditation. And it's not always easy because we're trying to tame our minds. We're trying to look at the world a little differently. And but we do make progress. And I will show you the last picture. I can find my PowerPoint. Oh, there it is. Cool. Okay. So this is, I think, number six. And our practitioner is at peace with the water buffalo and was going home playing a flute on the water buffalo's back, no fighting. And arrives home. That was the last pic. That was the last talk. And then now we're at number eight. And this circle is called an Enso in Japanese. And I'll talk a little more about that in a moment. But I wanted to read one of the verses that goes along with this image. All is empty. The whip, the rope, the man, and the ox. Who can ever survey the vastness of heaven? Over the furnace, burning ablaze, not a flake of snow can fall. When this state of things obtains, manifest is the spirit of the ancient master. There's a lot of metaphors in Chinese culture and in Buddhist culture in general. And so oftentimes the Enso is said to represent emptiness or everything or enlightenment. But those are kind of big words and can have a lot of different associations with them. I can really appreciate the Enso as just a circle. And there are many Buddhists, mostly I think Chan and Zen, who use painting an Enso as a meditation. So, for instance, Thich Nhat Hanh would do an Enso and do calligraphy in it. And there is a wonderful artist and teacher named Kaz Tanahashi, who's done a lot of translations into English of some, I think, Japanese teachers, writers. And he teaches workshops on painting Enso. So I'm giving you here, this is one done by Thich Nhat Hanh, and it's just beautiful and it's evocative. Here's another one, one of his big messages, interbeing. And then this is a colorful one that Kaz did. He uses like all sizes of brushes, like huge brushes, just really something, and a very lively one. And then I thought I'd show you, let's see. Oh, wait. Oh, Oh, I know. Let me do this. So I found an app and I was able to do this on my app. So, and it was really fun. Okay, I'll stop sharing. Okay, so I'd also like to read a paragraph by Martine Batchelor, and it's a commentary on this image, and I think it's a good way to understand it. So, this is what she writes. The ox herder and the ox are both gone. There is only a black circle. It represents emptiness. Earlier, when we became united with the practice, there was this idea that it is me, I that was practicing. Now this has gone too. We realize that nothing belongs to us truly. We can only care for it while it lasts. We also experience that we do not have a solid, separate identity. We are a flow of conditions. We are made up of all our genes, history, social conditioning, and so on. Who are we but a bundle of aggregates and fluctuations? We cannot identify with our feelings, our thoughts, our possessions. They all come and go. They rise upon certain circumstances, stay a while, and disappear. So this introduces my topic, that of emptiness, and the task of presenting some definitions, but more, I would really like to help us touch into the experience of emptiness. And I think perhaps in the past, you've probably experienced that emptiness is quite heady and full of contradictions, a slippery thing to get a hold of. And I really feel like we can let go of all that. So bear with me. I think what Martine writes, and she's French, lives in France, is married to Stephen Batchelor, has practiced for a long, long time, written books and so on. So I think what she talks about is a lovely way of saying that emptiness can be empty. And what would it be empty of? It's empty of our clinging, of our habits. When we look deeply at our lives and habits, we do begin to see that they come and they can fall away. And then what else might emptiness be empty of? Okay. So I really want to describe, I have two approaches to feeling into what emptiness is. And the first, and this is not my own thing, so it's really gathered from what many people have taught, and including the Buddha. So the first approach to emptiness is kind of an understanding of feeling into the vastness and boundlessness. You know, empty is not like just hollow. It's really a sense of vastness. And it's often tr actually trans, it's not just translated as emptiness. Some translators do translate it as boundlessness. It reminds me of that quality of samatha, abiding in serenity and peace. Samatha is a complementary quality of meditation, complementary to vipassana, which is defined as insight. And I would say that insight comes with the close reflection that we do in our meditation or can do. Or sometimes we just get insights out of the blue when we just settle down and aren't caught up in our usual habits of thinking and feeling. Samatha has this quality of quieting and settling when what arises may be less, maybe more intense. In our guided meditation earlier, what I was trying to do was feel into that vastness. And perhaps when you were able to settle into that, you might have felt that your sense of self wasn't there so strongly. Maybe it was even gone. So we can think of emptiness as being empty of our sense of self, our clinging and aversive habits, a capability of meeting life as it is without being caught by reactivity. Because, you know, when we have these feelings, when we want something, or when we act in anger or feel hurt, it's kind of a reaction to what's presenting itself. And we can sometimes have a spaciousness where we don't get caught in that. We see the feeling, we see the desire, and we think, well, I don't need to give into that. You know, there's space around it. So just as the cloud arises in the sky and changes, so too do our desires and aversions. They really aren't good or bad. They just arise and they change and they fall away. And our task really is just not to be caught up in them, not to further push or pull at them. So there are a couple verses I'd like to share with you that feel into this samatha. The first is a short verse from the Dhammapada, and it goes like this. Just like a deep lake, clear and undisturbed, the wise grow peaceful on hearing the teachings. I'll read it again. Just like a deep lake, clear and undisturbed, the wise grow peaceful on hearing the teachings. So I'll share a little story about how I got, and then I have a complimentary poem that's from the Tao Te Ching, and you will hear something similar. And then I'll share a story about this. When I was young, I was a little bit of a rebel, wanting to find my own way as a young person. So I left school, college, after my sophomore year. I took the tuition money my parents gave me and bought a plane ticket from San Francisco to Boston one way. And I didn't know what to expect. You know, I just knew that I couldn't continue college because I wasn't convinced of what I wanted to do next. And little did I know that this might be the beginning of a spiritual journey. I worked in a restaurant and in the business area of Boston where there are many, many shops. And I would take the tram daily to the retail place that I worked. Oh, no, to the restaurant. And when on the tram, I would read the Tao Te Ching and memorize the poems. And this one I'm going to read you is, I think, still my favorite one. So it goes like this. The ancient masters were subtle, mysterious, profound, responsive. The depth of their knowledge is unfathomable. Because it is unfathomable, all we can do is describe their appearance. Watchful, like men crossing a winter stream. Alert, like men aware of danger. Courteous, like visiting guests. Yielding, like ice about to melt. Simple, like uncarved blocks of wood. Hollow, like caves. Opaque, like muddy pools. Who can wait quietly while the mud settles? Who can remain still until the moment of action? Observers of the Tao do not seek fulfillment. Not seeking fulfillment, they are not swayed by desire for change. Who can wait quietly while the mud settles? Who can remain still until the moment of action? Observers of the Tao do not seek fulfillment. Not seeking fulfillment, they are not swayed by desire for change. So I think we have all felt challenged in our waiting quietly or not so quietly for the mud to settle, for our thoughts to go away, for our clinging to melt. And yet, you know, this does happen over time. And I feel like we, for any of us who have practiced for a while, even a little while or a long while, we know that we can settle. And it's a lovely thing. So I think the last two lines are interesting. Observers of the Tao do not seek fulfillment. Not seeking fulfillment, they are not swayed by desire for change. So this is us, right? This isn't just the ancient masters. This is us. So what does it mean to not seek fulfillment, not be swayed by desire for change? I think that in our practice, we are taught various methods, following our breath, attending to our sense of hearing, noticing our thoughts and feelings, attending closely to the qualities of what arises in our minds, labeling, etc. These are wonderful tools to collect the mind and heart, to cultivate concentration, and to learn deeply about ourselves and our habits. And we may do this with more and less success at different times. But who is letting us know whether or not we are more or less successful? What is success in meditation? Perhaps when we are judging ourselves successful or unsuccessful, this is a type of selfing. This is seeking fulfillment. This is wanting it to be better or different. So I think it can be really subtle, noticing how we do this. So on the one hand, emptiness can be experienced as something very peaceful, with little or no selfing, a quieting of mind and heart, a place from which we can appreciate things just as they are without judgment, a boundless, vast blue sky, sometimes a vast ocean of tears, of joy or sorrow. And I think of this most prominently as being with the world, with as little selfing, as little of our habitual habits of judging, of weighing, of doing as we can muster. So that's one way of looking at emptiness. And on the other hand, this is a second approach, which we can consider as these approaches as two sides of the same coin. Emptiness can be experienced as full of all that is, of everything, really. So let's look at how this can be. Perhaps some of you remember when I led a meditation to look deeply at an object, such as a piece of paper. If you look at a piece of paper or anything and look deeply, you can see that this paper could not exist without the many non-paper elements that contributed to its being in this form, in this place, for instance, in my hand or this iPad, with notes on it that I can read. When I look deeply at a piece of paper, I see the tree that was felled, sliced, chopped, transported to a mill, to become paper, stacked, wrapped, transported again and again, finally bought by myself or my husband, placed on a shelf, then in a printer. What went into making the printer? The inks, the plastic, where did all that come from? I can also see the sunlight, the rainfall, the wind, the moon. So you and I are just the same. We cannot exist without everything else on this earth, in this world, with each other. And the Buddha did describe emptiness as a characteristic of all things. And I feel like this is how we can understand that. And so if I am empty, if I have non-self, what am I empty of? And I've just said this, but I'm empty of a separate existence. An intrinsic reality separate from everything else. There's nothing in objects or in myself that is an inherent entity, eternal or permanent. And yet, don't we strongly experience the world, ourselves, as a continuous entity? And in fact, the Buddha teaches that the cause of our clinging and suffering is that we see ourselves as separate and independent, isolated and alone, when we really are not. We're deeply interdependent. So I'd like to invite you into another short guided meditation to feel into the fullness, the inclusiveness of emptiness. So yeah, get comfortable. So imagine yourself in a natural setting, say a meadow by a lake or in a forest. You listen to the wind, the water, birds chirping, insects buzzing. What qualities of being do you feel? Might you be in touch with a sense of wonder, of peace, of life being full? And how much are you aware of yourself? Perhaps less than at other times. Maybe you feel less of a need for this or that. You probably don't feel, I wish I could be at work right now, and so on, you know. So feel into how you can be present for whatever presents itself in this setting when you are in a peaceful place in nature. And also how full it is, how much life is going on. So I invite you to come back to this present moment and consider that this may be a taste of emptiness as well, of not clinging, of not selfing. And yet the experience is one of fullness, and I would say also inclusivity. As you listen to birds chirping or flying, wind rustling through leaves crunching under your feet, the air caressing your face, the sun warm upon your head, does the world feel all right in that moment? And amazingly, when you go home, you may take home with you some of that beauty, serenity, aliveness, a feeling of connectedness with nature, the universe. And yet there is also so much more going on. Birds are pecking at trees and eating insects. A hawk may swoop down to grab a vole for dinner. There are trees dying of bark beetle. There's drought. And you know, it is the same when we open our hearts and minds to the world. Or it can be the same. We read the news. We greet our partners or our friends. We greet our children or our parents. We have a good cup of coffee or tea. We watch an entertaining movie. We feel heartbroken over loss or violence. There is so much beauty and suffering that it can break your heart. And your heart can become more tender with attending to what is so. And perhaps in this setting, compassion arises for yourself and each other. So in conclusion, I offer the understanding of emptiness as a Dharma door to understanding impermanence and interpenetrating interbeing. Our practice helps us with this understanding, changes the way we see the world. Our suffering is a door to understanding the suffering of others, but also the beauty and wellness. And from this understanding, compassion springs forth. So thank you very much.
Thank you for listening. To learn how you can support the teachers and Dharma Seed, please visit dharmaseed.org/donate.